Hi Sandra, realizing reality, that's a nice topic to get into. Specifically since as a scientist I definitely was put on the wrong footing, and most of the religions do the same, because reality as such suggests that we are dealing with something real, something that is determined, something that is established. That is actually what the word real seems to mean. That there is something that we can rely upon and base ourselves on. But if you look at reality as a whole in detail, you can see that it is no more real or no more tangible than the wave for a surf rider. Because once you see that reality is actually just a passage, a transition in the ongoing process of creation, then of course every state of reality, every thing in existence is only the momentarily existing and transitory process as we perceive it, seemingly fixed in time in what we call space. It took me a long time before I realized that I had to think about this differently. Of course, I wasn't the first. Many people have done this. Heraclitus already said that you cannot step into the same river twice because it has already changed. So there is actually not a river but a process. David Bohm, the physicist, actually used the word rheo mode from the Greek rein, to flow, as the process aspect of reality, that it is a continuous creation, which is then not a noun but a verb. But when I looked into it rather from the medical perspective than the engineering perspective, I realized that we have to get rid of that notion of reality, because whatever we know of reality is only an interpretation of sensations. Much like what they describe in Sanskrit texts in India long time ago already, that there is a sensory impression of our environment onto our body. We would nowadays call it as the sea of vibrations that surround us, and all of these vibrations interact with our body in one way or the other, and then the body responds to that. And the standard response is that there is a sensory cell, most of them on the surface of the body, which then triggers a charge, discharge, as a result of some specific kind of vibration in the environment. That can be light, it can be heat, it can be motion, it can be the dynamics of a chemical molecule, as we have in smell or taste. And all of these different kinds of vibrations, which we evidently must understand as just different kinds of vibrations, then trigger a charge discharge in the sensory cell, which then relays into a neuron, which goes into a plexus, where all the signals of these different neurons are compared, and then it is passed onward into the brain, where all of the different impulses from all of the parts of the body are integrated into a hologram picture of the environment. So in India, they describe this sensory impression on the surface of the body as samsara, the sensory input. And the picture that we make of it, going from the point to the line to the plane to the volume of the sensory cell, the neuron, the neural plexus and the brain, that picture which we then end up with is what is called Maya. And that means that whatever is around us is only a kind of vibration, a pattern of vibration of different kind of coherence, and whatever we interpret of the reality around us is only a mental mapping of something which is actually potentially very much different than what we think that we are sitting in as an environment that we experience. Plato, the Greek philosopher, already had the metaphor for that. He said that people are like prisoners kept in a cave, and all that they see on the back of the cave is the shadows of people walking by in the daylight outside of them, but outside of their view. Nowadays we would compare it to people sitting in a cinema who are looking at a picture which comes from somewhere else, and they consider that to be real. So for them and for Plato, that reality is only a sensory input, or the effect of a sensory input, as we seem to experience within us. When you look in our body, in our brain, in our skull, you can see that this picture of Plato is very literal, very literally true. Because with the eyes, we are sensitive, susceptible to the vibrations of the environment. And the retina of the eye is actually a neural plexus in which very specific molecules, or rhodopsin, are able to capture the angle of incidence of the photons and thereby attribute different colors to it. From the eye, this information is then pipelined into the brain through the part of the eye where we cannot see anything, because that's where the tubing goes into the rest of the brain. It goes through the core of the brain, interacts with quite a number of different brain segments, left and right, and then goes to the rear of the brain, the occipital cortex, which is where we actually then process the picture from the right eye, the picture from the left eye, into a composite picture in which the sameness and the differences are cross-computed. It is like decoding a stereo signal, and as a result we then have our impression of what's going on around us. But as Plato said, this is just something that happens at the back of the brain. We don't actually know what's going on around us, because all we know is that we are perceiving vibrations in the environment. And how wrong that can be is discovered when the brain doesn't work, or when the sensory system doesn't work. Oliver Sacks has quite a number of descriptions where people in a way confuse one kind of sensory input with another and come up with a result which doesn't seem logical, or which other people would not call real. So how real is something if we cannot be sure that it's not the one but the other having the error in the processing? Maybe the people that Oliver Sacks describes are actually not having a filter in place and might have a somewhat better interpretation of what's going on around us. As long as there's no real understanding of what happens around us, we will not know. That, of course, is also the theme of the movie series The Matrix, which presents that same notion as Plato, that around us there can be vibrations fed into the sensory system, but it could be that the surface of the body is actually connected to a kind of LCD screen of a television or a computer, and that it broadcasts information directly into the skin. And we would not actually know if there was something on our skin surface giving the input which we then interpret from the samsara into the maya, or if there was something else going on outside. And how arbitrary this processing of information can be has been discovered when people were wearing prismatic lenses in front of their eyes, the triangle shape as a result of which, by the light prism, the image could be inverted. So the people would see an upside-down image. This is a very simple process. It had been used in periscopes. You look through a prism, then you can look at right angles, and another prism at the top of a tube will then right angle the picture again as a result of which had been twice right angles, and you can see the picture right side up again. If it's only one of them, you can see it upside down. But it turned out that after a couple of days, according to the descriptions I found, people would start to see the environment right side up. So it was evident that by these prismatic glasses they were wearing, the image that came into their eyes was upside down. But in their brain, it had been corrected, recomputed, to see it right side up. Combine that kind of understanding of the variability of interpretation that we have in the world around us to the foundation of mysticism, religion, science, and our notion of reality. If reality would exist, and if in that way a universe would exist, then the question, of course, is that universe just a kind of LCD printer screen on the surface of our body, giving us impression of something? And as in the film The Matrix, we are just stored in racks, as it was presented there. But by the relationship between the images that are fed into us, we have the appearance of interacting with each other. But we don't actually know of our direct environment. And that is also the case in a general sense. If you look at the universe as a whole, the reality at its largest is then called the universe or the cosmos. If that cosmos exists as we imagined it to be, then from where you stand, you have a space around you. That space will have a horizon beyond which you cannot see, which means that your perception is limited. That was the essence of the relativity theory of Albert Einstein. There is an event horizon limiting our perception of whatever is and can be. Quantum theory then addressed the question, what happens at that boundary of the event horizon? When you get there, what happens when you cross from one side to the other, when you do that quantum leap into the unknown? And field theory then postulated, well, essentially the quantum leap is what we perceive in the jump of the photon, the jump of the electron, in the electron oscillation and the electron bonding. So essentially we can see how that quantum leap, which would happen at the edge of the universe, would say compute how information organizes atoms into molecules forming matter, and vice versa. But at the edge of reality, we just don't know what's there. And so there are old stories which nowadays are considered to be foolish, that the world would be resting on a couple of turtles standing on more turtles and so on. But the question, of course, is what does that lowest turtle stand upon? We don't have the answer, because if you look at that image of a universe or a cosmos or the entirety of reality around us, then we know that there's something wrong about the way we think about that. If the universe were solid, you could put it in a box. If it was liquid, then you would need to put it in a bucket. If it is gaseous, you would need to contain it in a balloon. And if it is plasmatic, if it is a pure electromagnetic energy field, then you need a containment field around it. And that, of course, means that if the universe is within something, then whatever is that something contained in itself. The alchemists tried to resolve that by pointing out that whatever we know as matter or material or solid is actually only a form of a process as it has been solidified in a specific environment. So the form of matter is always conditional on the conditions and the context of the process. The process, however, is part of the much larger ensemble of all of the processes in the universe. So there is a kind of switching going on between these processes, determining what goes out into a new environment and what stays within the known environment. And that's actually already at the edge of the known and the unknown as we can address it. But at a still deeper level, we then must realize that those transformations which split up and compute those processes which form reality are in a way like decisions in a decision tree of a computer program, where we are then looking at the flow of electrons in a computer, which will produce a specific outcome on the screen, which we can sort of cross-regulate by the tapping of a keyboard or other sensory inputs. But the foundation of it all is that in the computer we cannot really tell apart if we are dealing with an electron which is part of the software or an electron which is part of the hardware. And that is also the question which Maturana and Varela worked out in their research on autopoiesis. Autopoiesis is the self-reproduction of anything, that anything can replicate itself. And they came into that notion because they were studying the relationship between perception and fantasy, or between a dream and a perception of reality. And they noticed that in the nervous system you cannot tell them apart. The two were a neurobiologist and a neurophysiologist, so they were measuring in the neurons what was detectable there, and they could not make the distinction from the measurement if the electric current that they could detect was part of a dream or part of a perception of reality, because all they could measure was an electrical current. Björn Nordenström is one of the many researchers of the body electropsychophysiology, in which they don't look at the cells and the materials of the body. Evidently the materials of the body are produced by the cells of the body, but the communication between the cells takes place mainly as the electromagnetic signals and radio wave fields. So when you look at that level, then you can see, as Björn Nordenström showed, that there is this immense interaction between information and matter. And at that level you can see that all of the body materials are in a kind of liquid crystal state, that a change of information will change the formation of the materials as it is produced by the cells. As I pointed out elsewhere, the cells are able to work with atomic nuclear forces. They are able to transform molecules, so they can form molecules, so that means that they must be able to work with atoms. That means they must be able to work with atomic forces. But as the cells synchronize their activities between them, that means that the energy that the cells work with is subordinate to the information that the cells work by. So at that level we can then see that the cells have the information of what they are doing within themselves. They are processing electromagnetic signals in the quantum field. The cells are also aware of what's happening in the cells around them, left, right, top, bottom, front and rear. But they're also immersed in the electromagnetic quantum information field of cells a bit further apart. And likewise, they are also aware of what's happening outside of the body. So there are four levels of information being processed by the cells. So which of those four levels of information processed by the cells is what we then should call reality? In science, they ran into this paradox at the moment that it was clear that classical science was not correct, in the sense that in the description of matter, a lot of information is lost about what happens at the molecular the atomic and the subatomic levels. So once classical science realized that they needed to shift their perspective from the physics of matter to the chemistry of molecules, it became necessary to change the model of description. Classical science had this, if you can measure it, it must be real. And there are a lot of scientists who still believe this, who say that if you measure it, you can know it. But they forget that the process of measuring is actually what results in the measurement. So the result of the measurement, which we can then describe as a model of reality, is not reality itself. So the classical model of science was only a description of a state of measurement as the outcome of something that happened. Schroeder realized that and was aware that when you look into these measurements themselves, you cannot easily tell them apart. That's also where Heisenberg described the uncertainty of it all. He formulated as, you can either know the position of something or the speed of something, but not both at the same time. If you look at it differently, you could say that you can look at the reality as if it exists, or you can look at the realization of things coming into existence, but you cannot really see how the one connects to the other from the perspective of the description of molecular chemistry. So the physicists, chemists and scientists at that time, this is the time of Max Planck, Albert Einstein, Niels Bohr and others, Schrödinger, Helmholtz and so many others, were trying to understand the universe and reality at a deeper level. So they came up with this notion that we need to look deeper, we need to look in at the way that the atoms are actually the foundation of everything that we call real, but at the atomic level we only find protons, neutrons and electrons, and there is nothing else that we can refer to. Once you step out of the deterministic reality of what is called real, the material defined interpretation of universe as a thing, and go into the understanding that the universe is a process, then once you go deeper and go into the atomic level of it, you can see that the universe is nothing more than an electromagnetic cloud with different forms of connectedness. But an atom is just protons, neutrons and electrons balled up in a specific kind of cluster, and tetrionics seems to have the better model for that. But it is still only an electromagnetic dynamic, an electromagnetic transformation. So the scientists at that time realized that there was something very much amiss in what they were doing, because how can you look at reality as if it is real when you know that fundamentally it's just an electromagnetic transformation field? But more than that, how can you consider anything to be real if you know that you too are only an electromagnetic transformation field interacting with another electromagnetic transformation field? So that's where they then realized that they needed to go to a different form of description. They came together in Copenhagen and decided that they needed to address this, but in fact they just chickened out. They just were cowards and didn't realize that if it is true that we are an electromagnetic field and that everything around us is an electromagnetic field, and if it is true that the interaction between us and the environment is an electromagnetic field, then we must by definition describe everything as an interaction of electromagnetic fields. So we need to understand that as a field interaction. And that is of course what superstring theory and the related vibrational descriptions of reality try to do. They look into what do you see, what do you get, if the protons, the neutrons, and the electrons are fallen apart into the subatomic particles, and if you only have quanta, then evidently there are no particles left in the universe, but the only thing that you have left is information in formation. So that means that the whole understanding of reality has a century ago, more than a century ago, already been changed. That there is no reality because the fixed deterministic picture of classical science is wrong. The whole notion that reality is a process of creation, where the Bibles and the holy books try to describe what happens, is wrong also, because that process very much depends on the transformations at a deeper level. So, but then the question is, how can you address that deeper level of transformations if there we can no longer refer to atoms, because at that level they are falling apart? Because at that level we then must do something very different than what happened in the Copenhagen Convention of those physicists coming together trying to rethink science, but doing a backwards thinking step and saying, okay, well, we'll just ignore that everything is interacting with everything else. We just ignore that we are part of that process of everything interacting with everything else. We'll just pretend that we are not creators in creation, and we'll just go back to the notion that the universe is particular, and that particles determine and define how the universe hangs together. So in that sense, they then replaced the notion of reality as a whole to the assumption of the reality of particles, which of course a strange kind of model, because that would mean that atoms in the universe are perpetuum mobile, and that you have no explanation for the origin of the atoms, because yes, at some point in a solar furnace atoms will be made. You don't need to understand how, and then you end up with a whole series of atoms which you can then string together and form planets and form life forms and can build computer chips and process computers and so on. They basically castrated the whole development of science and the understanding of understanding, because they neglected to look at the foundation of the physics, where they at that moment knew that the universe is a transformation of electromagnetic dynamics, atoms transforming into each other, yes or no. They knew that we are part of that electrodynamic transformation field, and they knew that our sensations and our perceptions are part of that electrodynamic field interaction. That is where my work changed the perspective, because if it is so that the universe is an electromagnetic field, we are an electromagnetic field, and our sensations are an electromagnetic field, then in our body we must be able to see how the realization of reality actually takes place. And a lot of my work is describing that. Of course, all of that is no knowledge. Science describes that, mysticism describes, religions describe that. It's just that they don't often use the language of the body processes. What we actually need is not the kind of language that we communicate by with each other, but we need the body language. And the body language is how cells communicate with each other, and then at the cellular level you can get a very precise image of how this process dynamic of realization takes place. Because the dynamic of realization is actually the same as that of the physiology, which is the communication between cells. Cell communication takes place in the form of molecules, which are physical. They have a charge variability, which is chemical. They are an electromagnetic spectrum, which is electromagnetic. And they are carriers of information, which is quantum field level. So that means that the process of realization is actually that what happens in the interfacing between one cell and the other. In the larger perspective, it's what happens between one organ and the other. At the still larger perspective, it's what happens between one body and the environment. And at the still larger perspective, it would be what happens between one living being and another living being in their environment. So then the dynamic of realization can be perceived by those processes by which we interact with the environment. We have this four-dimensional process of the sensations being internalized from the surface of the body into the brain, the sensory cell doing a Dirac pulse charge discharge, the neuron as a line doing a Fourier code charge discharge, then in a neural plexus where all these neurons come together and make this little tapestry. There is this moiré array cross computation, which actually already amplifies and selects, and from there it then goes into the Gabor hologram processing of the brain. So that is part of the dynamic of realization as we see it in our body. The parallel to that is how we ingest food. First we physically chew it, then chemically process it in the stomach, then electromagnetically rip it apart by the enzymes in the duodenum, and then take out the information of the food in the small intestine. The same pattern we see in the sexual interaction. There's the physical contact between the bodies, which leads to a change in the physiology. The chemistry is altered, as a result of which the nervous system starts to function differently. So it fires up in a different electromagnetic excitation. And the result is that the whole body starts to function as a radio field connector in the phase information field. So there are many more examples of the way that in our body there is this relationship between space, time, energy and consciousness. Space as it is in a three-dimensional form of, say, the hologram in our brain. Time as we see it in the filtering in the neural plexus, the planar, flat, two-dimensional neural plexus. We can see then how it is one-dimensional in the neuron, and that it is zero-dimensional in the cell, the point of the sensory perception itself. So we then know that this process of realization is taking place in four dimensions. We can call those four dimensions space, time, energy and consciousness. Space is three-dimensional, time is two-dimensional, energy is one-dimensional, and consciousness is zero-dimensional. Space is the equivalent of a hologram or a standing wave. Time is the equivalent of a traveling wave or a wave oscillation pattern. Energy is the equivalent of a shock wave or a boundary in creation. And consciousness is then at the level of the zero dimension of phase change at the most fundamental level. But that means that we can then understand that reality and realization and creation both as a noun and as a verb, is determined by that transition from the phase space to the shock wave in the energy, to the traveling wave in time, to the standing wave in space. And at the most fundamental level in the conventional kind of science that we have now, you would describe that as the relationship between the photon leap in the phase field, the electron jump at the atomic level, the electron oscillation at the molecular level and the electron bonding at the material level. But that is exactly the same as what was described by the alchemists. So the alchemist called the photon jump the element fire, the electron jump they called the element air, and actually at the atomic level you do really only have an electromagnetic plasma cloud. At the molecular level they called it water, and indeed at the level of chemistry you have this fluidity which is connected, so it has a connectedness, but yes, it can move around, so there is a relativistic dynamic. And then the realm of matter is what they called the earth element. And indeed, in the earth element, we can see that matter is tied by the bound electrons into coherent structures. So when we look at the realization of reality, we need to understand what do we have to get out of this model of science, and we have to cross-connect it to the models of religion, actually not in their political interpretation, as churches provide that, but in their mystical interpretation, or the philosophical, existential, ontological interpretation, as it is provided by the schools of mystery, because it is at the deepest level of the information organization in phase space that we can find the foundation of the relationship between reality and realization. So we essentially need to turn everything around. When we are taught to talk about reality, we are already given wrong information. And as Matarana and Varela pointed out in doing their research, there is a severe difficulty that the words that we use point at objects in that physical reality. And of course, you cannot understand the processes, you certainly cannot then understand the transformations, and you definitely cannot understand the information, which is at a much deeper level. So in that sense, we can see that the development of science was a transition from the use of descriptive language of words to a more abstract description of the chemistry of languaging. So we need to shift from the understanding of language to the notion of languaging, that we actually need to redefine language as we do the work of discovery. And in science we can see how that led to the transition from classical theory to relativistic theory to probability theory to unified theory. And that last step needs to be taken still. For taking that last step, you do need to include tetrionics and the science of life, otherwise you cannot see how nothing actually is the foundation of everything. But it means that when we describe everything in terms of the things that we see, we cannot come to grasp it at the level of things which we do not see. Because evidently, if a doctor looks at your body and then says that you're healthy or sick because there is a bump, yes or no, on your body, that is just a reference to the anatomy. But the anatomy is composed and created by the cells of the body. The body cells will actually create a bump, yes or no, determined by the process that these cells are participating in. If at some point the cells get the information that they need to produce more cells in a specific environment, then they will grow a bump. If they get the opposite information, then they will ungrow the bump. So we need to stop looking at the body or at reality as if it is a thing. We need to get out of this notion that there is something fixed and determined about reality. We need to realize that creation is not a noun, but creation is a verb. That reality is not something that exists, but something that keeps on existing because there is a process going on that keeps it going on. Just as you have a fountain which will keep on having its form until somebody turns off the water flow and the fountain collapses, this reality that we know is only conditional on the specific kind of processes that we have going on and the kind of relationships between the processes as they interact with each other. So that's where we need to have to use system theory, which help describe the relation between the state of things as founded on the processes underlying those things, determined by the transformation under the process level, which is determined by the information which actually does the change of regulation. So from system theory we can see that the information will determine the regulation, which will determine the process, which will determine the structure. System theory nicely put that together exactly in the same way as the alchemists already described it. So then we have the possibility to see how reality and realization are linked, or if we take it at a more fundamental level, how creation as a noun, a reality, and creation as a process, realization, are linked. So we are actually looking at creation from two perspectives. The one is as a state of being and the other as a state of becoming. And evidently the people who look at the state of being cannot quite understand the people who are looking at it as a state of becoming. In the same way that the people who are riding the surf wave will think that the wave on which they are riding is fixed and solid and something real, while somebody sitting on the pier sees the wave and the surf rider come by and notices that the wave will emerge from something and dissolve into something. So we need to get out of the myoscopic limited perception that reality is real, that it is fixed, and we need to go back to this understanding that reality is as unreal as everything that has been described by classical science. And actually classical science does not describe objects, but classical science describes models of objects. The objects of classical science are not the things in the world around us, but the objects of classical science are the descriptions of the things in the world around us. So science actually is not dealing with reality, but with languaging. So science in that sense is archiving and administrating the process of languaging of our perception. So they're actually dealing with the languaging part of realization. They're not dealing with reality at all. But we need to understand that we need to go deeper than that and realize that objective science is always done by subjective scientists, so that we need to not look at the descriptions of reality or the models of reality, but we need to understand how these models come to be. When is it that somebody, perhaps later on a scientist, notices something which was there all the time before but just was ignored, was not understood, was not described? So then we go to the connection where the perception of the environment and the processing of the information in the environment inside of us comes into the picture, and then we see that the subjectivity of the scientist is actually tied in directly with the psychosomatic effect. And the psychosomatic effect is based on the feed-forward feedback loops of the cells, that the cells, yes, they exchange molecules, but those are chemical, and in fact they're electromagnetic spectra, and essentially they're just carriers of information, they're forms of information. So in the psychosomatic effect in the body, we can see that the cells use molecules to capture, to store, to transform, and to release what they capture, store, transform, and release are actually molecules, electrons, photons, and quanta. So we see that the cell communication operates at all the four levels of alchemy, and that it actually is the full range between information, energy, time and space, and that the core of that interaction between those four levels is exactly as was described by the alchemists, in the form of the quintessence, which is the flipping of the quantum. And once the quantum flips, you will have the photon jump, which can then trigger the electron jump, which can then trigger the electron oscillation, which then can trigger the electron bonding. And that is the core of the psychosomatic process within us, where we can see that information and matter is in direct interchange. And we see it most explicitly at the level of the cell division, when the cell goes from the material organization into a molecular reorganization, into an atomic reorganization, and then from phase space something catalyzes a doubling of the process. It is as if the vortex from space matter to molecule chemistry to atomic energy then bounces back on phase space at the quantum level of the phase inversion, which is what the quantum jump represents, and bounces back as two cells. So that is the core of the psychosomatic principle. It is also the core of the dynamic within us, where the software and the hardware are totally interconnected. And that is the level where the cells maintain the temperatures of the body at this very crucial, crucible level, where the piezoelectric effect, the liquid crystal effect, the transducer transponder, also known as the transistor effect, and the photon, the intelligent gel effect, are all present. And it is at that level where changes of information will have the most effect on the changes of matter in the body. And the cells all coordinate that. The individual cells are able to do that. The cells can do that together because they share information. The individual cells use atomic nuclear energies in working that. But they share the cosmic universal information field around them to synchronize that. So it is at that level that we can then see that the realization of reality is in that process, where the cells individually and interconnectedly work as a supercomputer in processing part of the vibrational field around us in a kind of separate information field within us, which is as connected and as separate as you would have that in a Shaver transformer. And the Shaver transformer uses two coils to separate the current from the mains electrical lines to the local current in the Shaver or that machinery that needs to be separated, so that you can actually couple two systems while they're not coupled. And in the body we can see that in that same way, the body is coupled to the environment but not, and that's where healing works to restore that integrity. And we can also see that in the same way, the first cell is a unit, and once it has divided there are two units which still function in unity. And it is therefore that in my approach I have now reduced everything in healthcare and everything in science and everything in religion and mysticism to that core principle, where we can see that reality and realization are actually the same process, that we can actually relabel that as creation, as a verb and as a noun, because that's what we see when the first cell divides. When it is still one cell, we can see that it is real. But at the moment that it starts dividing, we see that it becomes unreal, that it goes from physical to chemical to atomic into phase space. It sort of dissolves back into information, and then out of that comes back at two cells. And there we can see that the cell cycle which existed in the first cell now exists as the two cell cycles in the newly formed cells, with those two cell cycles are complementary, so they together form a Möbius loop. And so actually we can see that in the division of that first cell, the cell cycle which was there before now comes back as a Möbius loop. So the zero shape has turned into a figure eight, and that connection between the zero and the figure eight is actually what we can then understand as the relationship between reality and realization. And that of course then gives the basis for a much richer, a much more participatory understanding of what we experience and what we do in reality, because we can then understand that reality is merely a sounding board or a mirror or an echo chamber, like if it's Stradivarius, for our participation in creation. And then we can also see that where science described reality as something fixed and determined and actually ended up with the science of dead matter, by realizing that what they leave out is the freedom of choice, we can turn everything that is known in the science of dead matter into the science of life. The only thing that we need to do is understand that all of the descriptions of reality are actually formalizations and formulations of realization. So then we can step out of that notion that there is a reality which is so-called supposedly real, and we can come back to the understanding that there is only realization, and that by trial and error we are still trying to learn how to work with that. It is not about having a description of reality without freedom of choice, but it is about having an understanding of how within that environment, that mirroring system, we are actually using freedom of choice to learn to operate as creators in creation. The principle of stereo helps understand that. The principle of the laser helps to understand that. The principle of cell division helps to understand that. And the formulation for alchemy help to understand that. Because when we look at it at the deepest level, the material level and the perspective from the material level is what we would call reality. But we cannot use that model for the simple reason that it is the end product of something else, and therefore it's outside of our control. But in understanding that reality is the result of all of these processes operating in four dimensions, we can go to the other side of that understanding, go to the dynamic of realization, understand that that is actually the process of creation, and that the process of creation is actually a verb, and that we are part of that, and that that is where we then operate freedom of choice, and from our freedom of choice are literally creators and creation.